This is episode 26 of Advanced D&D, a podcast from WUKY, hosted by Dan Wu and DeBron Thomas. In this episode, we will talk a little bit about the news, Afghanistan withdrawal happening from the United States, also talk about some COVID-related things, and we'll get to plenty of music and TV and movies and, of course, food and a lot more. It's coming up right here on Advanced D&D on WUKY. Well, here we are again, Dan. It's another week, and I really am just amazed at, like, you know, as somebody who was a journalism student, you know, paying attention to the news is quite a thing, but it really just seems like the craziness, or at least the wildness of things, just never really seems to end.
It really doesn't. The biggest news sort of in my mind, I mean, you know, COVID's always in the background, but the biggest news kind of taking up space in my head is the withdrawal of American troops from Afghanistan. Biden has wanted, said he's going to get all basically active ground troops out of there by 9/11, significantly by 9/11, 20 years later. And that has opened the door wide for the Taliban to basically say, hey, it's our turn. And they have, as of today, taken over somewhere between 2/3 and 3/4 of the country of Afghanistan. And they are last reported to be on the outskirts of Kabul. Once Kabul falls, the country is theirs. And hopefully most of our listeners don't need a reminder of why the Taliban should not be ruling a country with their fundamentalist ideologies. So, you know, on the one hand, I feel like in the past, other presidents like Obama have kind of struggled with what to do with Afghanistan. The American appetite for war and intervention, I think, is very, very low, especially for this drawn out of a conflict. And I think, you know, most Americans are ready to be kind of done with it. And I have a feeling, as bad as things are getting in Afghanistan, I think the Biden administration, with sort of, in some ways, the tacit support of the American people, we're just going to have to slowly turn our backs to this country and kind of ignore what's happened there. And hopefully history won't ignore sort of this chapter. I mean, in some ways, it's an echo of what the Russians did back in the 80s. You know, the world's, one of the world's greatest superpowers comes into this very underdeveloped country and then are sent home years later with their tails tucked between their legs. And here we go again. So what is the right thing to do? I'm just glad that I don't have to make any of these decisions.
Yeah, I remember being in school and learning about the Hundred Years' War. And by the end of it, you know, members of both sides didn't really even know what the conflict was about because they'd been fighting for so long. And I kind of feel, to a certain extent, that that is probably something that's also happening. And I mean, at least for me as a millennial, like, I mean, for most people, I think 9/11 was a pretty like pivotal moment in, you know, in life. A lot of things that we took for granted as being normal back then completely changed. And yeah, I don't really, there are so many layers to this. So I do hope that at the very least, it is something that can translate into the telling of this, that this is not just a, oh, we're out, you know, bye, see you later. Only took us 20 years, but I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. In other news, Haiti just can't catch a break. After the very recent assassination and resulting chaos, the assassination of President Moïse, now they've just been hit with a 7.2 magnitude earthquake. As of right now, 300 fatalities, 1,800 injuries, untold millions in, you know, damage, and people, you know, taken out of their homes. And Haiti is not a country in the best of circumstances equipped to handle these sort of natural disasters. And now they have not only internal political chaos and disorder and the natural disaster piled on top of it. And just, I don't know, some countries just have the worst luck.
Yeah. And I mean, I wish that the world would devote resources, you know, in a very fair and just way. Unlike, you know, things have been in the past. I really do hope that that they're able to get support to recover from this.
Yeah, my fear is you take something like international support, which is a lot of money and resource and material, coming into a country whose leadership is in question. That to me is such a rife opportunity for corruption and grift and for this well-intended help not getting to the people who need it. So fingers crossed, but it doesn't look promising.
Well, into kind of what that looks like here on our home turf, Senator Rand Paul, his wife, Kelly Paul, it was revealed that she bought stock in a drug made by a pharmaceutical company called Gilead. And this particular drug is what is used to treat patients with COVID-19. And if you're listening to this and you don't know the context, that might not necessarily sound like a bad thing. But here's the thing. When did this happen? In February of 2020, when the congressional body was being briefed on the seriousness of COVID-19 and, you know, kind of compiling that with Rand Paul's anti-mask, anti-vax rhetoric, and literally getting banned from YouTube for telling people that, you know, they can't arrest us all. Which, by the way, if someone says that to you, it's usually not a good idea. But countless people have lost their lives. And here he has profited off of, you know, a drug that is used to treat the very, you know, virus that we're all kind of in a pandemic with right now. So, you know, my thoughts for this, I pose a question to you is, do you think that this might be the moment that might make all the way around parties involved look at Rand Paul as like somebody who might need to go?
My initial reaction to the story, honestly, is neither shock nor surprise. In fact, at this point, it's kind of to be expected. The people who are out here shouting the loudest about whether it's anti-vax conspiracies or folks who are vehemently homophobic and trying to strike down equality laws and things like that, and suddenly it turns out, oh, wait, they've been having gay affairs in airport bathrooms. So this level of hypocrisy to me is basically expected and kind of par for the course. And it kind of saddens me that I'm neither shocked nor surprised. I don't know that you'll like my answer to your question, because I feel like we've been talking about doing an episode on accountability culture. And I feel like to some degree, accountability has become a very nebulous situation. And a lot of politicians have gotten really good at toughing it out and sitting, you know, aside a little bit until the heat, you know, cools down, until the story blows over and the cycle moves on to something else. And then suddenly there they are, they're still there. If you have no shame, then it is very easy to reject calls for resignation. And I think it's pretty decent guess that Rand Paul has no shame.
It really feels to me like that episode of Atlanta when Paperboy has got the, you know, he's there for the event, the club, they're popping bottles, having a good time, and Earn is just trying to get money from the promoter. And when he goes to try to find the promoter, this dude just like zigzags and dodges him, like literally in one scene goes behind like this door that, or this wall that just disappears. But the next time he sees him, he's like, oh, hey, how's it going? Oh, good to see you. Where'd you go? I feel like that kind of game is what is being played right now. But the difference is this isn't just like a, you know, a TV show. This is messing with real people's lives. So we'll see what happens. You know, a similar situation that I had thought might have been this way for another Kentucky state senator, which was when Mitch McConnell went after Matt Jones and tried to get him pulled off of his show. And many Kentuckians across the political aisle were upset at that. And I thought, oh, maybe this might be the moment. But no, he's still in office. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I know that a lot of people are trying to hope and want to get back to is concerts. whether they be indoors, outdoors. And I have to give a little bit of a some major props to someone who has been using their platform really to kind of advocate for safe environments for concerts. Jason Isbell has changed the rider in his contracts and has said that he will not play any venues that do not require vaccinations or a negative COVID test from 72 hours prior to the event of the show. You know, I think that we have seen a direct correlation with that since he is playing the Railbird Music Festival, and now the Railbird Music Festival is upholding those guidelines. There are a lot of different venues and festivals around the country that have been changing these things, and there have been some that have been resistant. And more artists are taking that leap of faith of stepping up for that. So I think that in, you know, as we go into the summer with this potential surge for the Delta and now the Lambda variant and the Delta Plus, there's a lot going on, but I think that this would be the safest way to be able to have these things happen. And it's really wonderful that Jason Isbell is using his platform to kind of push for this.
Yeah, I appreciate when artists and, you know, people in the public sphere can sort of take a stand, you know, taking some amount of risk that they will get some pushback and lose some fans. And, you know, in my mind, even just as a small business owner, you know, I'm going to take the stands that I'm going to take. And if I lose those customers, then they weren't really mine to begin with. So it's all right.
Yeah. And one thing I do appreciate about Jason Isbell is he does go back and forth with the people who respond to, he's not afraid of it. So, and he does it in a healthy way, unlike some celebrities. Well, moving into music, Lizzo and Cardi B collaborated on a brand new single. It's called Rumors. And the music video is like incredible. It's like, basically, if we were able to get a live action version of the singing women from the vases in Disney's version of Hercules, that's what it's like. It's a trip. It's futuristic. The message is pretty wonderful, but more importantly, it is a bop. And you know, I'm glad we have some new music from Lizzo. Mm-hmm. Moving into one of my favorite topics this week in Anderson .Paak. Anderson .Paak has recently invested to become a part owner of a sushi restaurant in Sherman Oaks, California, and has said that if you tell them that you know Anderson .Paak, they will charge you full price. So there is that.
Well, here's my big question. It's always interesting to me when you see celebrities of one stripe or another, particularly entertainers or athletes, and then they throw in with some sort of non-related business, like being an investor in a restaurant. I don't think anybody has parlayed a name into that sort of business better than Wahlburgers. That's right. Mark Wahlberg and his brothers own a national chain now of burger joints. So could we see a future national chain of Anderson .Paak sushi restaurants?
I think the only appropriate answer to that is by saying yes, Lord. Like, you know, it is interesting to see how many, like, because in that same thing, like, there are also plenty of celebrities that do things on the quiet, like real on the down low, that you don't even, you know, that are like part of things that you don't even hear about. So yeah, we'll see. I'm all for Anderson .Paak sushi though. That's I'm here for it. There's been a lot going on with movies and TV, but I want to pass this off to you because you do have a little bit of news to talk about in this as well.
Yeah, so this is something that's been on a lot of people's minds for a while, and it's finally, you know, the kind of news that's not so bleak and terrible. Ever since Alex Trebek died, they have been trying out a bunch of guest hosts, including LeVar Burton and Ken Jennings and all kinds of other folks. And trying folks out and then trying to find a permanent replacement. And they just recently announced that they have a replacement, but it's actually two. For regular episodes, it is a guy no one's ever heard of called Mike Richards, and he is an executive producer on Jeopardy. And then for special events, tournaments, celebrity contests, things like that, they got Mayim Bialik, who was on the Big Bang Theory. A lot of people are not happy about it. Because I think also for a lot of people, they're like, who the hell is Mike Richards? Oh, he's an executive producer. He gave himself the host job. And also there was so much goodwill for LeVar Burton to be the new host. And LeVar Burton himself lobbied very, very hard for it. And a lot of people aren't happy. And one of the people who is the most unhappy is acclaimed filmmaker Ava DuVernay. And she has offered to create a vehicle, some sort of game show or TV show for LeVar Burton. And what this immediately made me think of was the whole thing with Professor Nicole Hannah-Jones and UNC not getting her tenure. There was all this controversy because they had a major donor that had a whole problem with her 1619 project, et cetera. And it kind of resulted, in my mind, almost like the best case scenario. She said to UNC, well, they finally reversed their position and said, okay, we'll give you tenure because the entire world is coming down on us. And Nicole Hannah-Jones said, no thanks, I'm taking myself and my talents to Howard. And this, you know, I don't know how serious this Ava DuVernay, LeVar Burton show situation might be, but it has echoes of that, of, you know, if we can't be acknowledged for our talent and our you know, powers and abilities by sort of these traditional establishments that don't acknowledge people of color, then we're going to go and create our own thing. And I don't know, it has a lot of power. On the one hand, it sucks that it has to be this way. On the other hand, it's a rejection of, well, if the gatekeepers can't see what's good for them, we don't need to be playing in that sandbox.
I think another part of this as well is the fact that they were so careful about bringing out a swath of diverse candidates from all the way around, from Aaron Rodgers to Robin Roberts, you know, and just the part of it, this is the most frustrating. It's like you have all these diverse candidates that all could have done this job, and you pick the white guy. Not only do you pick the white guy, you pick the white guy who was calling from inside the house.
Yeah. Like, I think if Ken Jennings had gotten the job, a lot of, you know, LeVar Burton fans would have been a little grumpy, but that would have been a pick that made a lot of sense. And you know, like, he is one of the best known Jeopardy contestants of all time. He does have his own level of charisma and presentation. He can do the job. You know, that would have made some level of sense, but for not just a producer nobody's heard of, but like, he works for the show. He, you know, makes the show what it is. And, oh, you know, I'd like to have that job. So, ugh.
Well, and I also should mention that in 2018, Alex Trebek was asked about, you know, who he could potentially see hosting. And one of the first people that he mentioned was the CNN legal analyst, Lauren Coates, who is a Black woman. And she didn't get an opportunity to guest host. I don't know if she would have wanted the job or not, but the fact that here you have the guy saying already before he was gone, this is one person I'd like to consider, you know, again, just missing the landing all the way around. And it's, yeah, I don't know. Mike Richards. Who is Mike Richards? I guess could be an answer and a question.
Yeah.
Moving into some like somewhat happier and less oppressive news. I did get to finish the finale of The Bad Batch, which, if you are a Star Wars fan, I've said this on this podcast before. You know, Dave Filoni knows what he's doing, and the way that I think that the future of the storytelling in the Star Wars universe is going to go is that you're going to watch something and it's going to be similar to the way that Marvel has it, where there will be seeds planted and you'll see it come up in another property at some point, because they are already touching on some things in this series that we've already seen on other shows. So no spoilers, but I'm just saying, like, if you appreciate the Clone Wars era and, you know, this new era of Star Wars, The Bad Batch is definitely a good one for me.
Yeah, I kind of like the approach that both Marvel and Star Wars have taken to, they have their sort of mainline, you know, canonical movies, and then they have all these TV shows, they have offshoot movies sort of, you know, out of the timeline and just little one-offs. you know, you think of something like Solo or Black Widow. I think the approach is good, because if you're a super, super fan of either of these properties, you'll go see everything. If you're only a movie person, you go see the movies. If What If looks interesting because it's animated and you're an animation fan, you do that. You have people like my wife, Lauren, who loved WandaVision and has no interest in anything else that's happening with Marvel TV, and that's fine too. So it kind of is all things for all people, but in little bits and pieces.
Well, other things that I watched recently, we had talked about this too, is the Suicide Squad, James Gunn's take on the Disney property. They definitely did the thing that they did for Infinity War, where they show you a bunch of things and you're like, oh, this is going to be in the trailers and stuff, like, oh, this is going to be an integral part of the movie. And then it's there for like 5 seconds and then it's over.
Yeah. I don't know. What do you think? It's been 2 weeks since the movie came out. Let's just do a spoiler warning and go for it.
All right. Yeah. Spoilers. You've been warned. Here we go.
Yeah, the trailers would have you believe that there's this massive 20-person team called the Suicide Squad. And what's great is they waste no time, literally in the first 10 minutes, of introducing you to like the first 10, the Team A, I guess. And they just get obliterated in the most hilarious and gruesome. This is a very gruesome movie. First 10 minutes. No spoilers, but I would love to see a standalone movie about Weasel. Can we make that happen? It was to me like a 180 from the other Suicide Squad movie that we saw a few years ago, which was, you know, for a property that basically dredged up a bunch of Z-list characters, it wasn't that fun. It wasn't that funny. And this one just really pulled out all the stops. And great little tiny parts for folks like Nathan Fillion and Pete Davidson, you know, just great little throwaway roles. You just don't get to know any of these people. They just get blown away immediately. King Shark is my favorite. He's so great. I'd forgotten that Sylvester Stallone voiced him in the most, I don't know, it's like Grogu, if he was like Groot, I don't know. It had that same sort of vibe, but just also just kind of he was kind of a sad sack because like nobody wanted to be friends with him. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
I think that one of the takeaways I have from this, kind of just thinking about it too, is like, you know, I think bringing James Gunn was a smart choice from a studio standpoint, because I feel that a lot of the DC movies take themselves way too seriously. And I mean, and that's fine. You know, like I'm cool with a gritty, dark, you know, comic book story. Like that's cool. Some variety is nice. But I really feel like when you go back and watch Iron Man 1, like the difference between Iron Man 1 and even Iron Man 2, the tone is a little bit like it takes itself seriously, but then you get to like, you know, Thor Ragnarok and all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, we don't have to worry about being super serious about this. And I feel like in terms of DC, the Suicide Squad is the best story to be able to kind of do that around because these characters are so ridiculous. I gotta say, I was a little disappointed that that Captain Boomerang did not make it. Only because I really enjoyed his character in the first movie. He was one of the few good things about that movie, but we'll see what it looks like going with the Ayer cut. I laughed so hard through this movie, and it was definitely a nice escape from everything else going on.
Yeah, for sure. I want to talk for a moment about Harley Quinn. She has had such a rocky history as a character, the way she's written. And I think Margot Robbie is doing a bang up job portraying her, but portraying her as written. So when she started off being paired with the Joker, there was, you know, you were kind of making a joke out of abuse and trauma and mental illness. And I was very happy that Birds of Prey kind of got away from that. And this movie kind of even took it further. And between the writing and her performance of this character, it really looked at somebody who's obviously mentally ill without somehow pathologizing them, without necessarily excusing them, but still giving you a way to kind of reach into the character and be very sympathetic towards her, so that at the one moment she's, you know, efficiently murderous, and at the next moment she's very childlike. It's such a delicate balancing act in terms of an acting job, and I thought she pulled it off really well here.
Yeah, and also, you know, I've got to say, John Cena was ridiculous. Idris Elba was also incredible. Looking forward to the Peacemaker show that'll be next on HBO Max. But yeah, you're right. I thought that Margot Robbie was one of the best parts of Suicide Squad. I am glad that she was able to get her own movie in Birds of Prey. And then, you know, coming back into this film, it wasn't like how they treated Wonder Woman, where we met Wonder Woman in Batman versus Superman and it was okay. Then we see the first Wonder Woman and her character is great and it's awesome. And then by the time we get to Justice League, it's not even the same person. So I'm glad they were able to at least keep that consistency. And Margot Robbie is just, I think she was born to play that role. I really do.
Yeah. And I always forget that she's Australian.
Yeah. Well, moving into another DC property, there was once upon a time before HBO Max, there was the DC Universe, which was DC's version of what Disney Plus is now. And they had started with some original programming. Titans and Doom Patrol were their two flagship shows. And the third season of Titans is on HBO Max. Kind of talking about what we talked about a little bit before, the gritty, dark, superhero story is cool, but it's like, it's gritty and dark and it's got a soul. It doesn't just constantly beat you over the head with like, everything is terrible. Everything is dark. So you can't even see colors in it. So I highly recommend it. It's this new season is going in a really cool direction with some things, including the Red Hood. So that'll be cool. And then finally, Marvel's What If. I am so excited for the future of this this TV, like for the series, and kind of what it could mean for Marvel properties moving forward.
Yeah, I love the animation style, so that is great. My only sort of quibble with it, and I can roll with this as well. So the premise, spoiler alert, for those who have not seen episode one of What If, we're about to spoil it. And you've seen it kind of in the trailers. It's Peggy Carter receives the super soldier serum and becomes Captain Carter, sort of a British version of Captain America. She right out the gate with no apparent training whatsoever in anything, including using that shield, is just coming out level 99, you know, Captain America action, whooping so much ass that for a second I was like, oh, come on. And then I was like, okay, fine. It's fine. Whatever. Realizing also that it's a 30-minute show and you're packing a movie's worth or even a series worth of material into a show. I was very surprised. Did not know this was happening. I was surprised that scrawny Steve Rogers essentially became the first Iron Man. He got a suit of armor built for him by Howard Stark, Tony's dad. I think they called it the Hydra Stomper. And it looks most like Ironmonger's armor more than anything else. It looks like somewhere between Ironmonger and the giant, you know, the Iron Giant, and it has giant jetpacks and it's near indestructible. So a super fun show, some really great voice work in there. A lot of the actors are not from the original MCU voices, like they didn't get Chris Evans, etc., but wasn't a problem for me. Just filled with fun montages, really great artwork, and in some ways, like What If will be a show that you don't get tired of easily, because the next episode will be about something else entirely.
Yeah, and speaking to the voice acting, I thought that it was really great. You know, just the amount, first of all, the amount of people that they got to stick around. Sebastian Stan, Neil Donoff was there as Dum Dum Dugan, and of course, Hayley Atwell as Captain Carter. I don't think you could have done it without her. And, you know, I have to, like, I'm really looking forward to the next episode as well, which is what if Black Panther became Star-Lord? And, you know, we'll actually get four episodes hearing Chadwick Boseman's voice, you know. And so I'm like, I'm fine that they didn't get Chris Evans, because we got Chadwick Boseman, and that's something we're not going to have an opportunity to have anymore. So, I mean, I love the animation style, and just the, I think my favorite part though was looking at how many scenes were like ripped out of the movie, you know, and just shown a little bit differently. So now I feel like I kind of have to like go back and watch some of the older movies to pick, be able to pick up on some of that stuff.
Speaking of the T'Challa becomes Star-Lord thing, and I think I've already mentioned this to you before, and it's one of my just dumb little nitpicks, and hopefully the episode will be so great that I won't worry about it. But the theory is that T'Challa gets picked up by the Guardians and sucked into their spaceship and lives out in space from the time he's, what, like 6, 7, 8 years old till the time he's an adult. And when he's an adult, he still has a Wakandan accent. And that's just not how accents work. And I know I am nitpicking something about linguistics in a world where there are aliens in space and, you know, timeline bends and magicians. But, you know, let me have my one little gripe.
Yeah, you can have that for now. We'll see how they explain it in the show. Because
I feel like he should come out talking like Michael Rooker's Yondu, with that little bit of a southern twang. That would make more sense. Like, you're raised by this guy, you're gonna talk like this guy, maybe even with like an alien accent if they've got, you know, some alien folks in their crew. So whatever.
Yeah, you never know. Well, moving into books, what's been going on with you this week?
Still plowing through graphic novels. I love going through my library's new graphic novel shelf, because there are always titles that I've never heard of. And the one that I read this week that's really stuck with me is called The Stringer. It is illustrated by Pablo Callejo and written by a somewhat controversial political cartoonist named Ted Rall, R-A-L-L. And when I started reading it, it's about a sort of a war correspondent slash old school journalist. When I started reading it, it felt like it was like a real, like a nonfiction autobiographical or biographical about this particular journalist. And then it kind of starts going off the rails, because I don't want to spoil this book too much, because I do want people to read it. But it kind of starts off with the reality that print journalism and old school journalism is dying slowly or quickly, and that an old school journalist like him, like, doesn't know what to do with it. And so he starts bending some of his own moral and ethical parameters, and then it just kind of starts going off the rails. Very, very interesting, and it's written with a level of knowledge or expertise about world events and geography and just inside baseball journalism stuff. Just really, really interesting. It's one of the few books I'm about to pick it up and reread it, actually, which is a rare thing for me. So that's The Stringer by Ted Rall and Pablo Callejo.
Well, let's talk about food. I am a, you know, when it comes to breakfast, sometimes I just don't eat breakfast. But years ago, I was at a friend's house, and I was exposed, I guess, or I don't know, whatever the word you want to use. Eggs in a basket were shared with me. And I remember looking at it. And if you're not familiar with what an egg in a basket is, it basically, you hole out a piece of, you know, a piece of bread, like a sliced piece of bread, you toast it on one side in the skillet, and then you put, you know, crack open an egg and let it cook all the way through. And it is a magical meal, and it's something that doesn't take a lot of effort. And I have to give a shout out to one of our local businesses, because the Sav's Piment Sauce is really great, specifically on eggs, and with a eggs in a basket. So that's been my snack for the last few days. What about you?
That's a good snack, and it's also called Toad in the Hole. So that's the other nickname for it. It's summertime. I'm still trying to eat cold and refreshing dishes. One of my favorite foods of all time is banchan. And that's when you go to a Korean restaurant before anything else comes out, you get this wide array of little tiny plates of various pickled, marinated, grilled, you know, little vegetables, sometimes some protein. And I've never really cooked it until very recently today. In fact, I made several banchan for our family dinner tonight. And I'm also making this soup that has tomatoes, cucumbers, kombu or wakame, which is a kind of seaweed. And then it's served with this sort of brothy flavor, but also with ice. So not only is it a cold soup, it's an ice soup. And that's a very Korean thing to have, sort of like sometimes you'll get noodles on ice soup. So it's definitely a great sort of summer dish. And I would just encourage people in general just to widen out sort of their scope when you're exploring foods for the season. So cold dishes all the way.
That sounds really delicious and also one of my favorite parts. So thank you for telling me what the name of that was. I felt so uncultured. Yeah. Moving into the predictions for this week. There's a lot to think about, but I'll let you go first.
I'm throwing this back to our earlier conversation about Jeopardy and LeVar Burton not getting the spot and Ava DuVernay talking about, hey, let's just do something together. So my prediction is that Ava DuVernay and LeVar Burton will very soon debut Black Jeopardy. And my dream team of the first three contestants I would love to see would be civil rights icon Angela Davis, Will and Jada's kid, Jaden Smith, talented young man with all kinds of interesting thoughts, and of course, Tom Hanks.
Well, I'm going to flip things. There will be a reboot of Reading Rainbow starring Scarlett Johansson as LeVar Burton. And
can we also get Matt Damon in there?
Yes, featuring Matt Damon and Chet Hanks. Well, I think that gets us into pandemic advice. And I don't know if you have anything, but I'm just going to go ahead and say that, like, I'm running out of advice, y'all. I am running out of advice. Please get vaccinated. And if you don't want to get vaccinated, wear a mask, stay 6 feet away from each other, continue to wash your hands and do all those things. We don't need anyone else dying from this preventable disease at this point, especially with all of the mutations that are happening. So please take care of yourself and those around you. Do what you got to do.
Didn't we agree that we were going to record basically what you just said and just play that at the end of the show every week?
We did say we were going to do that. So I will make that happen in this episode. You'll hear it right after this. The pandemic advice for this week and the next coming weeks is very simple. Please get vaccinated. If you're not going to get vaccinated, wear a mask and stay 6 feet away from other people. Continue to wash your hands and be vigilant because this virus is still out there. This pandemic is still happening. It has begun to mutate. And the only way we're going to get through this is by taking care of those around us and ourselves. So again, please get vaccinated. And if you're not getting vaccinated, wear a mask and continue to stay 6 feet away from other people and wash your hands. Well, that was weird hearing myself say that, but that brings us to a close. This has been episode 25 or 26 of Advanced D&D, a podcast hosted by WUKY and Dan Wu and DeBron Thomas. Until next time, take care of yourself and we will see you soon.
Take care.